Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. What's the difference between telling a lie and keeping a secret? A lie is stating a falsehood about something to a person. Keeping a secret is not talking to him about it, not telling him. I've already discussed the morality of lying. Immorality. But now I want to talk, what is the morality of keeping secrets? And I don't think there's any one principle to cover all secrets. Sometimes you are morally obligated to keep a secret. Sometimes it's optional. And sometimes you must tell it, even though you promise it as a secret. For instance, you realize after you made the secret that it is going to enable evil to take place, which you could prevent if you revealed a secret. For example, a silly example, your nanny promises to take your child to the park, the new nanny, and she tells you she's getting a present for the mother. Please swear not to say where I am. You say, okay, I swear. And then police come in after her because she's a serial killer of children. You couldn't say, well, I swore I'd never say where she is. I can't break a secret. That's it. Your secret there is completely dead, and you're immoral if you don't break it. I would say, other things being equal, you should keep a secret, but in the context, if it turns out that keeping that secret objectively causes evil which you had no way of knowing, then I would say you should break that secret. For that reason, you should know something about a person, something about their integrity and about their character before you agree to keep a secret. If a stranger comes up to you and says, here's $100, would you please keep it secret? You should absolutely not do it. By the same token, even suppose your husband or wife comes up to you and says, here's a smoking gun, don't tell anybody. You have reason to trust him, but this is very doubtful, so you got to find out what's going on before you. Keeping a secret is, in effect, affirming a certain quality of moral character in a person, and you should not do it unless you have grounds for it. Now, you say, the last possibility here is, can you lie to keep a secret if the secret is something that properly should be kept secret? And I think, yes, you certainly can. I don't know that it's always obligatory, but for instance, if someone knows where the U.S. warheads are concerned, and he's sworn to secret, and the Iranian agents ask him, and he lies and misleads them, absolutely he's lying to keep a secret, and that's fine. Or even a more ordinary example. Somebody comes up to you and asks a question about your private life, which is like your private sex life, for instance, in which it's just your secret and private to you. In that case, suppose you say no comment you know, like, you rape young children. And he says, no comment. That's a suspicious answer. Or if you say, that's none of your business, that's still not, I don't think, sufficient. I think you should say, you are crazy. Get away and don't ask me nonsense like that. But you're still lying. I'm thinking that you're assuming some secret that's personal secret that's not wicked. Is it necessary to know sadness in order to know happiness? Can one exist without the other? Well, to conceptualize, that to get conceptual knowledge, you must differentiate. You have to, for instance, get the concept of table only by differentiating it from chair and desk and so on. So to get the concept of happiness, you would have to differentiate it from some types of feeling. For instance, fear, desire, frustration, or whatever. But I do not see why it must be sadness that you have to differentiate it from. Happiness, remember, is a very complex emotion. And I refer you to OPAR, where I show all the factors involved. It is not just a pleasure or a series of pleasures. It's a fundamental pleasure in life, in your relation to existence and in what you can achieve. And this is not something you can capture in an instant and differentiate from something else. I don't think that happiness can be derived by differentiating within introspection. You can get pleasure. You can get a series of pleasure just by introspection and conceptualize them in contrast to various forms of pain. But the idea of a deep, fundamental pleasure as opposed to superficial, transitory, that kind of differentiation must be conceptual when you analyze what is the difference between various patterns of pleasure and enjoyment. So you have to know some negative emotions versus some ideas of pleasure. But the negative emotions do not have to be sadness. They have to be something that would bring pleasure and enjoyment to the fore. And as far as can one exist without the other, I don't know why not. I don't see why not. Why do you have to be sad? Why does happiness require sadness? I don't see why. Pleasure requires, satisfaction requires the understanding of a pre-satisfaction state. But that doesn't mean, it implies the existence of loss, failure. As a human being, you'd have to understand the possibility of loss. But that doesn't mean actual sadness would have to exist. Of course, in fact, it exists aplenty. We're speaking logically. The concept does not require it. Conservative talk show host Dennis Prager, I add parenthetically, is sometimes very good if you could abstract away his religious element. In order to assess the moral character of others, Prager often asks the question, if you come across your dog and a stranger hanging off a cliff and could only save one, which would you save? Who would the objectivist save? Well, this is a lifeboat question. You know, putting values in a situation which is not the situation in which human beings live or form values. We do not form our values in order to deal with people who are drowning or hanging off a cliff or falling from an airplane. So they're lifeboat questions, and morality is not defined to answer such questions. So I think there's no one answer that I can say objectivists should have. Depends on their values. I can say if I was given that choice, without a moment's hesitation, I would pick my dog and let the stranger fall. Without a moment's hesitation. I regard my dog as very close to my child. A stranger is a man. A man that I don't know is a potential value. But to me, my dog is a great and actual value. I won't even bother to tell you the proof I've given of that with the surgery I've gone through with her and the operations and the rehab and the love, etc. The idea of throwing that overboard because somebody I don't know is having a problem or is even having a life problem is just outrageous to me. Now you say, but isn't man above the animals? Yes, in general. But that doesn't mean anything wrong with some animals are above some men to some people properly. That is egoism. The man is nothing to me. The dog is everything. Well, close to everything. So it's an outrage that this question is asked. An author I never knew in person, but deeply admire, passed away a year and a half ago. And I'm ashamed to say that the news hit me harder than even the death of some of my relatives. Is there something wrong with me? No. I laugh about relatives because relatives per se are not of value. Friends that you chose, creators that you admire, those are valued. But if somebody is just there because of blood, not because of values you see, why is that of any significance to you? I have, when I last counted, which was years ago, and counting ones by marriage, 168 cousins. I don't even keep track of them. I never did. One or two I liked, but the fact that they're relatives, if I thought that those were values, I'd die of overload of the crow in terms of value. Now, your attitude to the author could be that you like him in a personal way so much that he is in effect like Ayn Rand's work to me even before I met her. You take the work as implying a person that you personally admire to the point of love, even though they're only the work, but you take the work as signifying, implying them. So I don't see anything wrong with the problem as you state. Only problem I would see is if it's the case that you can't react also to here and now living persons that you value. If your admiration is reserved for the unattainable, the ones you'll never know, the ones you're safe with, because if you felt it for a real person, it's not safe. You don't know whether they'll betray you. You don't trust people, etc. Then you have a problem. But if this is simply over and above your ability to value human beings, absolutely. What did Ayn Rand mean by including children among the dead in the Taggart Tunnel disaster? Is it moral for children to be punished because of the beliefs of their parents? The novel is condemning totalitarianism, statism. And the point of it is that that kind of system destroys everyone, innocent or guilty, and does so not by accident of personality or specific policy, but by necessity. You are asking this question on the assumption that justice is meted out by God. So that if someone is innocent, he should not be punished because God wouldn't punish the innocent. But there is no God, and punishment's propriety is not determined by what God would do if he was here. The negative effect is determined by the laws of reality, by cause and effect. The fact that you personally did nothing wrong will not save you if evil men are in power. And that applies not just to children, it applies to the citizens in a concentration camp, on any totalitarian dictatorship. Any people in this country who are robbed blind unjustly by the government. If a novel takes as its setting that kind of country, does it imply that for the author to be just, she should have the innocent leave the train first in order to be fair to them? That is simply fantastic. Simply fantastic. No. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.